On this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, we discuss the latest news in the ASC industry, and in our focus segment, we discuss the proposed CMS 2024 HOPD ASC payment rule, including the proposed changes to the ASC quality reporting program.
Welcome to the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, the longest-running podcast specifically focused on the freestanding ambulatory surgery industry. We would like to thank our sponsors, Surgical Information Systems, providing cutting-edge information solutions for surgery providers. Trivalence. Trivalence offers a comprehensive next-generation ASC solution that optimizes payment and supply chain performance, enabling actionable data insights. And Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies, the nation's leading regulatory and accreditation compliance resource for ambulatory surgery centers. For more information about our sponsors, please visit our website at ascpodcast.com.
Welcome to episode 193 of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey for July 18th, 2023. Recording from our studios in Spencerport, New York, this is Sue Cronkite, Chief Researcher for the ASC Podcast with John Gailey and Operations Manager for Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. We would like to remind our listeners that the ASC regulatory environment is a rapidly evolving landscape, and the material presented in this episode is based on the most current information available as of the date of recording. As such, it is important to recognize that this information may be subject to change, and we advise all ASCs to stay up to date with the latest regulations and guidelines issued by their relevant regulatory bodies. And joining me today is John Gailey, the owner of Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies and one of the most respected experts in the ambulatory surgery industry. With over 30 years of experience, Mr. Gailey has authored over 10 books on the ASC industry, and he is a sought-after speaker on regulatory accreditation and finance issues.
So we're recording just after we finished the July Administrator Boot Camp last week, and in the middle of which the CMS 2024 proposed HOPD ASC payment rule came out. Sue, I have spent the entire day today recording on Tuesday. I spent the entire day reading through the 900-some-odd pages. You don't believe me when I say I read all 900 pages of it.
But, and you don't believe me when I say I offered to do it instead.
Right? No. A lot of interesting things. It's not quite as boring as I thought it was when I first saw the summary. Quite frankly, Sue, I think we are about to issue probably the most comprehensive review of the payment rule, certainly from what I've seen so far. And we're going to make some resources available to our patron members in the form of a spreadsheet so that you can actually compare the 2023 to the 2024 proposed payment rule.
A little more user-friendly written that way.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll have fun in our focus segment. In the meantime, let's just talk about what's going on. Our next, so as we said, we finished up the July Administrators Boot Camp. Pretty small group this time. We think that we made a mistake in scheduling this in the middle of vacation time. So the July Administrators Boot Camp was, we had a good crowd, but it was not as big as it normally is. So I think we're going to move that to August in the future, and probably the Business Office Manager Boot Camp will go to September now. And in that regard, the next boot camp is going to be the Business Managers Boot Camp beginning on August 8th. So if your business, and the same format that we've used with the Administrator and the Director of Nursing Boot Camps will apply here. And it's really focused on individuals that are much more involved in the financial aspect of the operation. So for more information, go to ascpodcast.com. And the 2023 Multi-State Virtual ASC Conference recording is now available. That is a complete recording of the two-day 2023 virtual conference that we did in June. If you couldn't make it to the live conference, no worries. You can get access to the recordings of all eight of the enlightening two-hour sessions. We know that trying to get to live conferences is a very expensive prospect. It's not expensive not only in terms of money, but the, you know, the time that it takes away from from your current job. So that's the nice thing about these conferences.
And even our live virtual ones, we as you mentioned, we record them because we understand even that, you know, you can't always stay
the entire time. Yeah. And that has been a hallmark of all of our conferences, really. There, we always have the recordings. I can't say we'll always do that in the future, but certainly all of our past ones are done. Now, the interesting thing, so if you're a patron member of the ASC Podcast with John Galey, member of ASC Central, which is our patron program, you get access to the multi-state virtual conference for free. Otherwise, you can sign up for $299.99 to have access to those programs. So there'll be a link to this in the show notes. And keep in mind, if you are CASC certified, you can get 16 AEUs. And if you are CAPE certified, you can get 4 IPCHs. So it's a good bargain for the AEUs that you can get. And that brings us to our next topic. Of course, we're very supportive of the CASC and the CAPE credentials here. The CAPE is the Certified Ambulatory Infection Preventionist, and I believe we have an exam coming up.
Do the CAPE exam application period is open from August 1st to the 31st for the October 2023 exam. So to apply, you must there are some qualifications. You must be a licensed healthcare professional who is responsible for the ASC's infection prevention program. You must have experience in infection prevention or oversight of infection prevention activities as outlined in the applicant's job description, or hold the Certification in Infection Prevention and Control, or CIC credential, and you must have obtained 10 contact hours in infection prevention education over the last 2 years.
And we do have a preparation program available at the ASC Podcast website. So we have Infection Prevention 101 and Infection Prevention 201, and both of those together really can help you prepare for the exam, at least the educational components of it. Obviously, you really have to have experience and real hands-on working with the program, but our educational program really was designed to help prepare you for the CAPE exam. Mm-hmm.
But I think, yeah, with the CAPE and the CASC, you really need to have some good experience behind you. But
yeah, you can't really pass that test without, you know, without being on the job for a couple years.
Yes.
So let's talk about our recent news. I guess the biggest news, as we mentioned in our lead-in here, is that the 2024 CMS HOPD ASC payment rule was released on Thursday of last week. It was a little disappointing in that there were no new procedures. And the increases, Sue, I went through, I didn't talk to you about this, but the increases for the procedures, the most common procedures that we see, were pretty good, between 5 and 7%, though the overall increase was actually less than 3%. We'll talk about how that works a little bit later, but the rate that they publish as an increase is actually an average across all the procedures, but each individual procedure is separately scored, so that makes things very confusing. Best news, though, is that dental procedures were added, and that's a very good development, something that for developmentally disabled individuals who tend to need a ambulatory surgery center for those procedures, they might be a little bit more profitable, a little more encouragement for ASCs to do that. And then we'll also talk in our focus segment about the ASC quality reporting. Had a number of interesting developments. It was disappointing that they are continuing the COVID-19 vaccination reporting requirement, but there are some new measures over the next few years that, shall we say, will be challenging to implement. So more about that in our second segment. Sue, you got some other news.
I do. So an Ohio plastic surgeon lost her license last Wednesday due to live streaming her operations on TikTok. And also some patients reported they had surgical complications. She was accused of actually answering online questions and looking at the camera and talking to the camera while she was performing surgery. In one case, she was performing an abdominal liposuction, and the patient later had complications and was found to have a perforated small bowel and soft tissue infection. The doctor's license was permanently revoked, and she was fined $4,500.
Well, so, unbelievable. I don't know how.
Well, she claimed that it was for educational purposes.
Yeah.
But you can't do that when you're actually performing the procedures.
Right.
And I think she admitted that it she maybe got a little carried away.
Yeah.
You know, I think people get used to being, they think it's so much fun to get a TikTok thing and they get a lot of followers, and she lost track of what was the important thing.
Yeah, I don't know much about TikTok. That's one thing we don't do.
No.
I believe it's because they're very short things, and you know, I can't even, you know, do an introduction in a short period of time.
It's not meant for
everybody
me.
In the world knows. Not TikTok was not meant for me, so I've never looked into it. But losing our license seems like the least that could be done there. And it's, again, sad. I hope that all of our patients have done well afterwards and have recovered.
Yeah. And in Becker's ASC review, a North Carolina physician was found guilty of reusing single-use devices. He said the doctor performed 1,500 balloon sinuplasty surgeries between 2011 and 2018, which actually made her one of the highest, or made her the highest paid Medicare provider of that procedure in the U.S. during that time period. But unfortunately, she only purchased 36 single-use dilation tools, which are needed for the surgery, but she billed Medicare for hundreds of the devices, which meant that she was reusing them several times, and sometimes she was just washing with some soap and tap water between the cases. So she did not charge, she did not charge the patients for the copays, and she advertised it as a free sinus spa and encouraged patients to just come on in for the service. A lot of them may not even have needed it. It was just sort of this advertised pampering, if you could call it that. She allegedly backdated documents and forged patient signatures to deceive Medicare. According to the Attorney General's office, she was found guilty in January of 20 criminal counts, including device adulteration, fraud, conspiracy, and identity theft. She has now been sentenced to 25 years in prison, followed by 3 years of supervised release, and also ordered to forfeit $4.7 million.
Again, it's an unbelievable strike. Yeah. You know, we know that the rules are in there with regard to false billing, you know, fraud and abuse. And, I've done a lot of sessions about this, and I've always felt that, you know, maybe, you know, our industry is over, there's over-focus in our industry. It's hard to believe that a doctor or, you know, like the plastic surgeon we talked about before and this doctor here could do this in all consciousness. I don't know. You know, there's as you were listing those things, so I'm thinking of so many different things that were wrong. Using single-use devices on multiple patients, billing the Medicare program for a single-use device, which, you know, was not actually used as a single-use device. Washing the devices with soap. I'm laughing, and I'm not laughing. I'm actually cringing.
Yeah.
With soap and water between cases, not
they
charging
shouldn't have
for
been reused in
at,
any
all.
Case
right,
at all.
Right, right. I mean, you shouldn't have even had to wash them.
And sort of the headline is the single-use devices, but I believe what really probably got her more jail time was the whole Medicare
fraud. Yeah. Backdating documents, unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So again. Hopefully that is a one-up situation, and there aren't a lot of other people out there doing that.
And I wanted to talk a little bit about the physician pay cuts from CMS.gov. CMS issued a proposed rule that announces and solicits public comment on proposed policy changes for Medicare payments under the physician fee schedule to be effective on or after January 1st, 2024. They're proposing nearly a 3.4% cut to the conversion factor used to set the fee schedule. The president of the American Medical Association made the following statement. The proposed Medicare physician payment schedule released today is a critical reminder that patients and physicians desperately need Congress to develop a permanent solution that addresses the financial instability and threatens access to care. When adjusted for inflation, Medicare physician payment already has effectively declined by 26% from 2001 to 2023 before additional inflation and these cuts are even factored in. Physicians are one of the only providers without an automatic inflationary increase. This is almost biblical in its impact. 7 lean years that include a pandemic and rampaging inflation. Physicians need relief from this unsustainable journey. And he went on to say, these increasingly thin or negative operating margins disproportionately affect small, independent, and rural physician practices, as well as those treating low-income or other historically minoritized or marginalized patient communities. Piling on more cuts is an unsustainable approach. Congress needs to turn its attention to fixing Medicare so we can preserve access for patients.
You know, unfortunately, because I think there's this perception, and of course it's somewhat true, that, you know, physicians receive or make an awful lot of money in comparison to other people in the community. or in the economy that, you know, they can continue to have these cuts. But 26% decline before you take into consideration inflation seems to me to be a substantial disincentive for people to come into the industry, and especially to take care of those marginalized populations that were mentioned there.
You don't want the only way that a physician can, I don't want to say get by, but to really succeed in their role is to really work with, you know, a very well-off populations or only in the highest paying specialties, because we need all the specialties. And
I think that's one of the reasons that I think you're going to start seeing people going into more concierge medicine, relying on concierge medicine in order to be able to maintain their lifestyles.
Well, already PCPs are getting harder and harder to come by. You know, nobody with this wants to be a primary doctor. It's got to be all specialized.
But. Yeah.
And more bad news for the healthcare
industry.
You're
pretty depressing with the news this week.
I know. Sorry. this is just some information on some recent violence against healthcare workers. So the AAOS, or American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, released a statement following the fatal shooting of a hand surgeon in Memphis last week, and also following, in June of 2022, a spine surgeon was killed along with others in his practice. So the AAOS was offering their condolences and support to the families and colleagues of those surgeons. And the president of the AAOS said, "We cannot stand idly by as threats of violence against our members and their patients proliferate with little consequence. A physician's office should be a safe haven for physicians, healthcare teams, and patients, and we need to do all that we can to further prevent these tragedies, now and in the future." The Bureau of Labor Statistics shows the rate of injuries from violent attacks against medical professionals has grown by over 60% from 2011 to 2018. And that's to 2018. Think of how much, you know, with the pandemic and the stress and the overworking of healthcare workers and patients having to wait longer, I just can only imagine that it's gotten worse.
And we know mental health in general has been a big problem, a big issue.
Yeah. And AAOS has developed toolkits to help educate and advocate for safer workplaces, especially in healthcare.
We'll provide a link to that toolkit in the show notes here.
Okay. It actually was pretty good. I went in, and it looks like there's ones for different, like, hand specialists and different orthopedic specialties, and also just general, you know, workplace violence and that kind of thing. And I did want to mention Orthopedic Advocacy Week is next week, July 24th through the 28th. And you can find out more information about that and get involved by going to aaos.org. You can find more information on the toolkit there as well.
And we did want to thank Becker's there for that article that was in Becker's Spine at the beckerspine.com website. So let's take a short break, and we'll come back, and we'll in our focus segment, we'll talk about the 2023 CMS HOPD ASC payment rule. It's been a long day, and the surveyor's just left, and you are exhausted and looking at the list of items that you have to address. You wonder, how can I deal with this and still take care of my patients? More importantly, you wonder, how can I ever keep up with all of the regulations, standards, and accreditation requirements? How can I always be prepared for a survey and reduce my stress levels? Well, that's what Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies does, day in, day out. We become your outsourced regulatory and accreditation resource. We can maintain your policy manual, develop your education programs, help out with fire and disaster drills, do your risk assessments, oversee your quality improvement activities, help run your quality improvement meetings and governing body meetings, and we can even prepare your monthly or quarterly financial statements and help you figure out where you are financially. We are a retainer-based service. We don't take ownership. We don't charge based on your revenue. We have one fixed monthly fee, and we can tailor your services to your exact needs. So whether you're looking for help getting over a survey, preparing for a survey, or looking for a long-term relationship to assist you with your ongoing regulatory and or financial needs, please give us a call at 585-594-1167 or email us at info@ahstrategies.com. That is info@ah-strategies.com, or visit our website at ah-strategies.com. Thank you. So, Sue, as we mentioned, the proposed 2023 CMS ASC and HOPD payment rule came out on Thursday of last week. It always comes out in early July, and the final rule comes out in November. So let's talk a little bit. Let me set the stage here. I want to mention that the payment rule is based upon the changes to the Medicare ASC reimbursement system mm-hmm. that came into place in 2008. And under that program, as we mentioned, the proposal comes out in July, and you have a 90-day period of time to review the proposal, make comments on it, and ask the ASC Association, that is, always issues a a pretty comprehensive review of the program and makes recommendations, many of which, unfortunately, are not taken into consideration, particularly when they talk about additions to the payment program. But the goal of the proposal is to set rates for the Medicare fee-for-service program, which often ends up going into the insurance calculations for other insurance companies as well as Medicare managed care providers. It also establishes the parameters for the Medicare quality reporting program. And we've talked a lot about that program over the last couple of years, and especially in this last year. Basically, you have to do all of the things required in that program in order to get your full increase in your rate. Otherwise, Medicare reduces the amount of your increase by 2%. For example, with the rate increase to 2.8% this year, you'd only get a 0.8% increase in 2024 if you did not submit the data for the 2022 year. It's always 2 years behind. It is important to note that this is a very complicated system, and it's well beyond the scope of this podcast to be able to explain the system, since it would take hours to do that. If you are interested in more information about how that program works, we'll be talking about it pretty extensively during the ASC Business Office Managers Bootcamp mm-hmm. in August. And again, more information at the ASC Podcast website. But the important thing to note is that I'm going to mention the increase. I already did about 2.8% across the board increase, but that increase will not affect every or not be the number that that you will see in your payment increase, because the increase will be different depending on the results of the cost reports filed by the hospitals. As we know, ambulatory surgery centers don't file Medicare cost reports, and therefore our information is not used. So we're totally reliant on the information that comes out of the hospitals in order to be able to reallocate the reimbursement rates between the different CPT-4 codes that are part of the APC system. Every year, they adjust the acuity levels of those individual cases by CPT, so that means you can go up or go down. Now, generally this year, we'll get into this in a few minutes, but generally the increases actually tend to be higher for the common procedures that we see in ambulatory surgery centers. So I haven't spent a lot of time, Sue, going through every single case here, but it was interesting to note that, a lot of the common procedures have gone up more than that 2.8%. Let's start with a big overview of the whole thing. Using the hospital market basket update, CMS is proposing a productivity-adjusted hospital market basket update factor to the ASC rates for 2024 of 2.8%. And that update applies to ASCs meeting those relevant quality reporting requirements we just talked about. And this update, as we mentioned, is based upon the hospital market increase of 3.0%, which is then reduced by a 0.2% reduction for productivity. I don't know how they calculate that, but basically what they say is every year we get, more and more productive in the ASC industry, and they have to adjust the inflation rate increase by that productivity increase. One of the most interesting aspects of the 2024 proposed rule is that both the hospital outpatient and ASC payment rates now include some dental services. So for 2024, to address patient access issues for dental services under anesthesia in the ASC setting, CMS has proposed the addition of 26 separately payable dental surgical procedures to the ASC covered procedures list, better known as CPL. And 78 ancillary dental services to list the covered ancillary services. A full list of the procedures are included in the 2024 Addendum AA, and there'll be a link to that in our show notes. In particular, this proposal is expected to increase equitable access for individuals with disabilities and other complex chronic conditions who normally require anesthesia for dental services. Over the years, Sue, I've run a number of surgery centers, and, some of them have done dental procedures. Some of our clients do dental procedures, and they really do it just out of the kindness of their heart because they don't make much money from those procedures, but it is something that you know, serving that largely Medicaid population and developmentally disabled individuals. And now it looks like, based upon some of the rates that that I saw proposed, that it can actually become pretty profitable, or at least marginally profitable, whereas you were taking a big loss before.
Yes.
Moving on to the ASC Quality Reporting Program, there were revisions to three existing measures, voluntary and mandatory. So the 90-day post-cataract visual function has been revised. The COVID vaccine status, which unfortunately is continuing through NHSN, has made some changes to align with the CDC changes to the NHS reporting requirements. And the appropriate follow-up interval for normal colonoscopy in average-risk patients measure has been updated to match up with revised clinical guidelines. And in addition, there are two new measures, measures of outcomes following elective primary total hip and or total knee arthroplasty, which I thought was a good development, Sue, because I think that that will help encourage the movement of ambulatory surgery cases out of the hospital into the surgery centers and also demonstrate how high quality those services are when they're offered in the surgery center. But then I read the details and realize how complicated that system's going to be. So good news, bad news. I think it's a good measure to add, but unfortunately it looks like it's going to be administratively very difficult to calculate. And then they are resurrecting the previous ASC facility volume data on selected outpatient surgical procedures with some modifications. There were no changes to the OAS CAPS proposals listed in the 2023 payment rule, so it's barely mentioned. And Sue, I noted in all of the major publications out there that announced the 2023 proposal, nobody mentioned OAS CAPS. So when you and I first saw that, we thought, oh, I wonder if they're dropping it. Nope. Basically, what they said is no news is bad news for us. In other words, they made no changes to the proposal from 2023. So that is going to be voluntary for 2024, and then it will become mandatory beginning in 2025.
So with the – sorry, going back to the addition of two new measures, how do they decide – what they want to measure? Does it mean that they've started to see there were complications and they feel like they have to follow up on that? Or
no, I don't think that's generally what happens. Now, the one was they're just trying to collect some volume data. And we'll get into a little more details on that a little bit. But I think, to your point,
the outcomes measures.
Yeah, the outcomes measures. I think this is really coming out of, I mean, I think it's all for the best reasons. Everybody realizes that a lot of these cases are moving out of the hospital, and there's this concern.
Want to make sure they're that they're having good outcomes before they
That's right, because there could be some real negative outcomes, especially with the population, you know, that usually has these total joints.
Yeah.
You know, they're not necessarily the healthiest patients. So, I mean, as I said, I think this is a good thing. You know, we certainly want to see an encouragement of that movement. We want to demonstrate high quality. But there's going to be a cost associated with that administratively in being able to calculate these measures. And I think that's a general thing we should point out is that over the years, the ASC Quality Reporting Program has been kind of one of these side things we do. And usually it's, you know, the nurse manager or the director of nursing does it on her, you know, whenever she has a free moment. I think we're going to have to start taking the calculations here and the research that needs to be done with these a little bit more seriously, especially when we get into OAS CAPS, especially with the measure with regard to 90-day post-cataract procedures and with this new one with the total hip. And again, I'm going to go into a lot more detail in a few minutes. I did want to mention that in the hospital market basket calculation. Originally, you might remember if you've been listening to this podcast for the 5 years we've been on, originally the calculation of the increase, the inflationary adjustment was based upon the consumer price index, which we knew was not appropriate in the healthcare field because healthcare costs tend to go up higher than the consumer price index. So that's not always been the case. But CMS switched to the hospital market basket calculation, the same one that's used by the hospitals in 2018 and was meant to go through 2023. It's a five-year experiment. And, you know, what CMS did is they wanted to assess during that time frame whether there was a migration of the performance of procedures from the hospital setting to the ASC setting as a result of the use of the productivity-adjusted hospital market basket. But, of course, the impact of COVID-19, public health emergency on the healthcare utilization, and in particular in 2020, was tremendously profound, as they said, particularly for elective surgeries, because many beneficiaries avoided healthcare settings and continue to avoid healthcare settings such as hospitals when possible to avoid infection from the COVID virus. Therefore, CMS for the 2024 payment rule is proposing to extend the five-year interim period, which expired at the end of this year, for an additional 2 years for 2024 and 2025.
I mean, that does make sense.
It does. And of course, I think it's more accurate. You know, we always anticipated the hospital market basket would be higher than the CPI, but that has not been the case in the last couple of years as we've seen dramatic shifts or dramatic increases in the consumer price index. Indeed, consumers, especially with food and energy costs, have experienced a huge increase, especially within the last 18 months. So CMS wants to continue to analyze whether the application of the hospital market basket update to the ASC payment system is going to have an impact on the migration of services to the hospital setting, which I think would be a good thing. So let's go through some of the most common codes. Now, I need to mention a disclaimer here is that the CPT-4 coding system is a trademark of the American Medical Association and all rights are reserved. So, Sue, I picked out, I think there's about 11 codes in here. We'll start with arthroscopy. I actually went in code order. So 29822, which is shoulder arthroscopy, in 2023, went from $1,414 to $1,490. That's an increase of about 5.3%. So pretty good increase, you know, certainly one of the highest increases that we've seen over the last decade. Knee arthroscopy, which is 29881, is going from the same is going up the same amount from 1414 to 1490, again, a 5.3% increase. We know that, of course, GI procedures are very common in ambulatory surgery settings. So an upper GI scope, 43236, has gone up 7.4%. So GI centers are going to find that very nice, from 429 to 461. And again, the numbers I'm giving are the national payment rates. They will have to be adjusted for your local rate based upon your salaries in your region. And a diagnostic colonoscopy, 45378, went up from 432 to 465, 7.7% increase, slightly more. And then the colorectal screenings, the G0105 and 0121, G0121, both went up from 432 to 465. And again, that was a 7.7% increase. So GI centers are going to do very well under the proposed 2023 payment rule. And so the other thing that's going to be interesting is to see what happens with the interim to the final rule. Last year, because of the inflationary impact, the final rule was a little bit higher. The increases were a little bit higher than the proposed rule. So I don't know if that's going to happen. And of course, I don't have a crystal ball. Do you have your crystal ball on you?
No.
Unfortunately, you forgot it. But that's to be seen over the next couple months. Mm-hmm. Moving on to pain management, 62321 went from 335 up to 349, actually 350, which is a 4.3% increase, which is smaller than the other ones we've been discussing. And 64479 went from 443 up to 464. And again, these are the national payment rates, not the ones that you would necessarily be getting. And that went up 4.6%. Moving on to ophthalmology, after cataract laser surgery, those YAG procedures, 66821, went from 276 up to 296, which is a 7.4% increase, which is pretty surprising. That's a procedure that we've often wondered whether they would go down because, you know, it's a very quick procedure done in an ASC. It can also be done in the office. So a 7.4% increase is quite dramatic, and it's actually higher than 66984, which is the cataract removal, the most common cataract procedure, which is going from 1101 up to 1165, a 5.8%. So of these, I think there's 11 procedures on this list. The smallest increase was for a pain management at 4.3%, and the largest increases were for the colonoscopies, which went up 7.7%. Now, Sue, I've created a spreadsheet that shows all of the increases from 2023 to the 2024, and we're going to make that available to our patron members. But I also created this neat little spreadsheet. You'll be surprised of my ability to actually do spreadsheets now. You know, I thought I was starting to lose it there. But I created a little spreadsheet that you can enter the codes that are most common in your center and then find out your own increases. And again, these are the national payment codes, not the ones for your region. So these will have to be adjusted for your local region. Mm-hmm. Moving on to the dental codes. I don't know much about dental codes. But they all begin with a D, and you can find them in Addendum AA. And again, I'm going to have a link to this on there in the show notes here. So I'm not going to go into each of these, though. It was interesting. I don't really know much about this, but I guess we're going to learn a lot about this. So they said that 26 codes have been added. I only found 25 added, but I'm sure I'm doing something wrong there in calculating or looking up the rates in the Addendum AA. But interesting procedures that were included in this rate were gingivectomies, bone replacement grafts, auto tissue grafts, extraction of coronal remnants, extraction of erupted tooth, removal of a tooth implant, impacted tooth removal, and tooth root removal and tooth reimplantation, incision and drainage of abscess, and mandible grafts. And the dental rates range from $356 for those incisions and drainage to $2,685 for that mandible graft. So again, they seem to me to be pretty, good reimbursement rates compared to the hundred some odd dollars that were reimbursed under the old system. So we'll have to see how the dentists think about this and whether mm-hmm. this will encourage them to bring more procedures to the ASC, and also for the surgery centers, see if they're encouraged to have those procedures come. And lastly, let's talk about the ASC Quality Reporting Program. You might remember, as we've talked about quite a bit, the ASC Quality Reporting Program is a pay-for-reporting program. So it's not a true quality program yet where you're actually getting paid based upon the quality that you're rendering. And that program has been around. The program has been around for about a decade now. And, of course, there really has been no movement toward payment based upon the quality. But it does require ASCs to meet certain quality reporting requirements to receive or if they don't, receive a reduction of 2.0 percentage points in their annual payment update, as we mentioned, which is 2.8% this year, if they actually don't. So if you don't do reporting of all of the ASC quality reporting elements, then you are subject to this 2.0% increase. And that's an important thing to remember, Sue, of course, is that sometimes people remember to do, you know, some of the measures, but might forget or don't get into the NHSN system, mm-hmm. Which is very onerous and very difficult to get into. So let's talk about for 2024, the CMS is proposing to modify three measures within the program. The first one is the COVID-19 vaccination coverage among healthcare providers. And they're changing in order to align with the updated Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, National Healthcare Safety Network measure specifications. So basically, they want to continue the measure, but to make sure that the definitions are in alignment with the CDC changes. And in my reading of the 900 some odd pages there, I think, as I understand it, the biggest change is to redefine fully vaccinated to mean that it's somebody that has had all of the initial vaccinations as well as the updates. Moving on to our favorite, and I'm being sarcastic here, is cataracts improvement in patients' visual function within 90 days following cataract surgery, which they're recommending a change to the survey instrument that's going to be used. So I'm just going to read kind of a paraphrase of what was said right in the payment rule, which is very disappointing here. And they said right in the rule that the ASC industry has expressed concern about the high administrative burden of reporting the 90-day cataracts visual function measure, as the measure uniquely requires coordination among the clinicians of different specialties. That's opticians, the ophthalmologists, and, of course, the surgery center. Mm-hmm. Once the patient leaves our center, we never see them again, which means we're going to have to coordinate all the way back to the optician, who's going to determine whether that patient has actually, gotten full vision back within 90 days. So this is what CMS stated. In an effort to decrease administrative burden surrounding in-office time constraints, we reiterate that while we recommend the patient's physician or optometrist administer, collect, and report the survey results to the ASC, the survey instruments required for this measure can be administered by the ASC itself via phone, by the patient via regular or electronic mail, or during clinician follow-up, thus showing showing the CMS's total lack of understanding mm-hmm. of how ASCs work. I look at this, and if you're a high volume ophthalmology ASC, mm-hmm. you've got a full time person that's going to be doing this. And this is a survey tool. So it's not just, you know, as your vision improve, there's a series of questions, you know, that they're being asked, like, are you able to play board games? Are you able to watch television? Can you read?
And by the way, keep track of that 90 days. You have to call that person.
Right.
And who, you know, they don't know you. They don't remember 3 months ago they had this. You know, so
that's right,
and of course, answer and
coordinating with the office, be it the ophthalmologist or the optician, of course, is going to be difficult. So, I know the ASC Association has been fighting this tooth and nail. And you know, when we last talked to Bill Prentice on this a couple months ago, he was continuing this fight, but it looks like we've at least lost it, at least as part of the proposal. And then they're also proposing here that the ASC use one of three standardized tools created by the ophthalmology industry. So there is an option, but none of them are going to be easy. Like, is your vision improved, you know, since your cataract surgery? So needless to say, this is going to be an even bigger burden than we anticipated when we were talking about it in previous episodes.
It's going to probably just involve a lot of those discharge instructions, just saying, you know, you're going to hear from us in 3 months, and we're just going to be checking on, you know, how you're doing. And maybe with the right prepping, people will be willing to answer those questions. And
and of course, keep in mind that, you know, I mean, I think the elderly population probably is not as mobile as the younger population is. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they'll still be at the same address, same telephone number, same email address, you know, 90 days later. But if this were to be implemented for a younger population, that would be a very different situation. And then the other change to an existing and by the way, I should point out that this cataract is currently a voluntary measure, so you can be reporting them. I don't know of any of our clients that that do that. The last measure that they're modifying is the appropriate follow-up interval for normal colonoscopy in average risk patients. And what they're doing is they're just making CMS is just proposing to modify the colonoscopy follow-up interval measure denominator to all patients age 45 to 75 years for the ASCQR program beginning in the 2024 reporting period. So that is this year. And then in addition, is CMS is proposing the adoption of two new measures, actually one new measure and one measure that's come back. The first one is the risk standardized patient reported outcomes following elective primary total hip and or total knee arthroplasty measure to provide specific insight into the quality of care of the procedure. So we mentioned, as we said earlier, that this is a good measure. I think it's a good idea to start evaluating the quality of the procedures that are being done. But listen to how this is implemented. So ASCs would submit the following variables collected preoperatively between 90 and 0 days prior to the procedure for each patient. And that would include the Medicare provider number, Medicare health insurance claim number, the Medicare beneficiary identifier, the date of birth, date of procedure, date of the PRO, date of the data collection, the procedure type, the mode of collection, the person completing the survey, the facility admission date, and the patient's reported outcome measure version. And then you would have to use a couple different tools, including what is called the VR12, which is a mental health subscale, the HOOS, the JR for total hip arthroscopy, and the KOOS and the JR for total knee arthroplasty patients. So I'm not going to go into a lot of detail here because, first of all, I don't know much about it. You just put your head down, Sue, as you were looking at this list thinking,
dear.
Oh, my goodness, how are we going to explain this to our clients as well as how are we going to implement it? So it does seem like a lot of work. So if we thought that the 90-day post-cataract surgery was bad enough, this one is even more. Mm-hmm. I guess the big difference here, of course, is that these are big procedures. You're getting reimbursed a substantial amount of money for them. Of course, there's a lower volume. But that seems to be quite a bit of data. And again, you're going to have to assign somebody, most likely a nurse, to be able to gather all this information because some of the questions that are included in these surveys seem to be quite clinical in nature.
It looks like before and after. So you can do it 90 to 0 days.
I only mentioned the beginning part. ASCs would submit the following variables collected postoperatively between 300 and 425 days. In other words, more than a year after – well, just short of a year – well over a year following those procedures. And again, it would be the Medicare provider number, the HIC number, the date of birth, procedure date, date of the data collection, the procedure type, mode of collection, person who collected the facility admission date and then all of that information that comes out of the surveys. So the data submission period for the procedures would also serve as the review and correction period. Data would not be able to be corrected following the submission deadline, so you can't go back and correct it. And then they're proposing, thankfully, a phased implementation approach for the adoption of this measure into the ASCQR program with voluntary reporting periods in 2025 and 2026, followed by mandatory reporting beginning in 2027. Now, Sue, note that year, 2027, that's the year I intend to retire. So I think that that is a conscious decision on CMS's part so that I don't have to do this. Yeah, I mean, it's a good idea, as we've talked about quite a bit, that it, you know, I think we want to be able to collect data that shows that we can do these total joint procedures safely in the ASC setting. But this seems like a very onerous reporting system that we're going to have to go through. And then lastly, a new measure, which is a repeat of an old measure, is the ASC facility volume data on selected outpatient surgical procedures. So if you remember back, I think it's about at least 5 years ago, there were, you know, we reported selected data in broad categories. So this is they're reviving that program and adding to it. It's going to be voluntary for 2025, mandatory in 2026. So it's not something we have to do in 2024, but it's getting prepared for it. In the previous ASC rule, in other words, prior to this change, CMS required reporting in six categories: gastroenterology, eye, nervous system, musculoskeletal, skin, and genitourinary. Now, again, that's the system that was in existence a good 5 years ago and then discontinued. Under this new proposal that will be voluntary in 2025 and mandatory in 2026, the first modification of the previously adopted measure is that they're going to add two procedures to that. So they'll add cardiovascular and respiratory to the six that were included previously. And the second modification to the measure is that they propose that instead of collecting and publicly displaying this data surrounding these eight broad categories, they would more granularly collect and publicly display data reported for the top five most frequently performed procedures among ASCs within each category. So if you did this, you remember that you had to take all of your procedures and stratify them into those six categories there, or stratify them into the six applicable categories. Now you're going to look at the top five procedures in each of those categories, which now that I'm thinking about it, could actually be more work because of, you know, having to go in and, you know, stratify everything by CPT-4 code, try to figure out how to put them into those categories. And some of those procedures are difficult to put into a single category, as a matter of fact. So it's going to be an interesting situation. So, Sue, that's it for this. Sorry, I hope I didn't put you to sleep. I mean, it's great information. It's not I'm not putting you to sleep. I think
just feeling overwhelmed. Clients, you know, I feel like going to be difficult.
There's going to be a lot more information, of course, put out there. We seem to be the first to press on, you know, this level of detail right now, though I know ASCA right now is working, as they always do, on a very nice summary of the program, and I'm sure that'll be out probably shortly after we publish this episode. And again, if you're a patron member, you can get a spreadsheet with a comparison of the 2024 to the 2023 codes, as well as a lookup tool. And again, that's right on the ASC Central website if you're a patron member. So let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have a very quick list of upcoming events in the ASC industry.
In this segment, we provide an update on upcoming topics for the podcast, our upcoming virtual conferences, and upcoming speaking engagements for John and his staff and other events in the ASC industry.
So depending upon when we actually get this episode published, this one might actually be over. So the Flora Society of Ambulatory Surgical Centers annual conference and trade show is July 19th, which is tomorrow, through the 21st at the Lowe's Portofino Bay Hotel Universal in Orlando.
The Georgia Society of Ambulatory Surgery Centers and the South Carolina Ambulatory Surgery Center Association's joint semi-annual conference and trade show is August 17th through the 18th at the Hyatt Regency Savannah in Savannah, Georgia.
And the Illinois Ambulatory Surgery Center Association's 2023 annual meeting will be August 24th through the 25th at the Hyatt Lodge in Oak Brook, Illinois, and I'll be speaking at that conference.
The Ohio Association of Ambulatory Surgery Centers annual education conference and exhibit is September 19th and 20th at the Hilton Polaris in Columbus, Ohio, and we will have a special episode including interviews with some of the speakers.
So that's one of our favorite associations. We've been there for so many years. I'm disappointed that I'm not a speaker, but I certainly understand since I've been a speaker there for quite a number of years. I guess they need a break from me. And the California Ambulatory Surgery Association's conference and exhibits is September 13th through the 15th at the Portola Hotel and Spa in Monterey Bay in Monterey, California.
The Idaho Ambulatory Surgery Center Association's annual conference is September 21st and 22nd at the Hilton Garden Inn, Boise, downtown.
And the New York State Association of Ambulatory Surgery Centers 2023 annual conference will be held October 4th through the 6th, 2023 at the Desmond Hotel in Albany, New York. And I'll be speaking and moderating some of the sessions, and then we'll have a special episode with interviews.
And the Washington Ambulatory Surgery Center Association's annual education conference and trade show is November 9th and 10th, 2023, at the Tulalip Resort and Spa in Tulalip, Washington. John will be speaking there, and we hope to have a special episode with interviews.
And I just like saying Tulalip.
I know. I like that.
It's a nice name. And that's a wonderful state association, too, and I very much enjoyed my trip up there last year, especially you know, it's really kind of nice weather at that time of the year up there. And don't forget about our upcoming boot camp. The August Business Office Manager Boot Camp will be held August 8th through the 11th. And just like all of our boot camps, it's not just that virtual component. It's also mentored and with weekly drop-in sessions, optional drop-in sessions.
And don't forget about all of our recorded events. They're all available on ASCpodcast.com. We have the Credentialing Conference, the Fall 2022 Finance and Accounting Conference, the Conditions for Coverage Conference, the Medical Directors Conference, and the On-Demand Director of Nursing and Administrators Boot Camps.
And, of course, we just announced the 2023 Multi-State ASC Virtual Conference, which the recording is now available. And a reminder, we've talked about it a couple times during the episode here, for everybody to become a patron member of the podcast. It helps support our efforts here and keep the lights on in our studio. The patron program, which is also known as ASC Central, is an exclusive membership website that provides a one-stop ASC regulatory and accreditation compliance operations and financial management resource for busy administrators, nurse managers, and business office managers. And resources that are included with the patron program include access to a number of virtual conferences, including the Credentialing Conference, Conditions for Coverage Conference, Medical Director Conference, and the Multi-State Conference that we mentioned earlier, as well as links to policies and procedures, forms, drill kits, and access to AEU credits. And, Sue, one of the best parts about the patron program, I think, is the weekly drop-in sessions that we have, which are currently on Friday afternoons at 3 o'clock. During the wintertime, they had been in on Saturday at 10 o'clock Eastern daylight time, but we did move it to, for the summertime at least, to Fridays at 3 p.m. So, and again, membership helps to defray the cost of producing the podcast, including research staff, travel costs to conferences, equipment costs, and production costs. For more information about the patron program, visit ASCpodcast.com. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey. We hope you found this information informative and engaging. If you did, we encourage you to share it with your friends and colleagues in the ASC industry. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss one of our episodes. We'd like to give a special shout out to our amazing team who make this podcast possible. Our sound editor is Sue Cronkite. Our executive producer is John Gailey. And our dedicated research team, which includes Jenna Alvarez, Judy D'Ambrosio, Alex Borneman, Zach Kalaritis, Amy Durbano, Lori Rodericks, Kathy Fodi, Donna Macchio, Ann Geyer, Diana Powell, and Christina Norman. We couldn't do it without them. Our music is provided by Media Sushi and Mike Noah, and the ASC Podcast with John Gailey is hosted on Podbean and is available on all major podcast platforms. We look forward to bringing you the more exciting discussions and insights in future episodes. Thanks for listening.
This episode of the ASC Podcast with John Gailey is sponsored by Surgical Information Systems, Trivalence, and Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies. Surgical Information Systems provides cutting-edge information solutions for surgery providers. Trivalence offers a comprehensive next-generation ASC solution that optimizes payment and supply chain performance, enabling actionable insights. Ambulatory Healthcare Strategies is the nation's leading regulatory and accreditation compliance resource for ambulatory surgery centers. For more information about our sponsors, visit our website at ascpodcast.com. This podcast is an educational and operational tool and is not intended to be a comprehensive resource for all rules, regulations, and standards that an ambulatory surgery center must meet. The advice provided should not be considered as, nor does it constitute, legal advice or opinion. When reviewing specific situations involving legal and regulatory issues, attorneys and other professionals should be consulted. This has been a production of Eden Group Development. All rights are reserved. If you are interested in advertising or sponsoring the ASC Podcast with John Gailey, please email us at info@ascpodcast.com. We would love to hear your questions and comments. Please email us at comments@ascpodcast.com.